Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Zelda Universe Podcast. Happy holidays, and thank you so much for joining us this lovely December season. My name is Connor, and it is wonderful to have you all here. Joining me with me this time on the podcast, we have Matthew. Hello, Matt.
Howdy, sir.
Thank you so much for being with me this fine, what is it, afternoon? I guess it's evening for you.
I'd say it's evening. Well, no, yeah, it's afternoon for you, technically.
Yeah. Time zones are wonderful.
It's a two-hour difference, I believe, between us. So for me, yeah, we're in the evening here. I'm still waiting on some rain to move on in.
I would like, well,
the meteorologist.
Ah, well, it's nothing but rain where I'm at. We get snow.
I know.
Once or twice in the year, which is a little sad because I grew up in Michigan and there's already snow over there now. And this time of year, you want snow. Because it's Christmas and holidays and New Year and all that fun stuff that we get with this time of the year. And that's kind of the stuff
I tend to work with a bunch of people who do not like snow because since we don't get it very often, nobody around here knows how to deal with it. And therefore, everybody panics. So 1 inch of snow will just shut everything down.
Well, all I can say is that that is consistent for pretty much everywhere that I've ever lived. And I've lived in a lot of places that do and do not get a lot of snow. And I was thinking, we don't get a whole lot of snow in Hyrule, except in very specific areas. Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom gave us the most snow that we have ever really seen in Zelda, except for Oracle of Seasons. Which, a quarter of the time, it was nothing but snow, which was kind of cool.
You know, one of the things I do love about Zelda games is that they do take into account all of these kind of different meteorological effects and environments, that kind of stuff. And that's something that has always really excited me. There's a lot of environmental beauty within Zelda that I think tends to be kind of underplayed by and overshadowed by the story, you know, the overall story of it. But the Hyrule is beautiful. And any land that they talk about, you know, or let's say in Majora's Mask, you know, when they're in Clocktown. I think it's called Clocktown, I think, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, Clocktown. You know, that area is still beautiful. And when they go into the mountains with the snow and everything, and then you get to see it, you know, while it's covered in snow, and then after it's partially melting and, you know, has a springtime effect, it's just really cool. You know, and those kind of things, especially when I was growing up as a kid, I absolutely loved that. As part of my experience growing up as a developing meteorologist, that was something I really, really loved about Zelda games that I didn't get to have with other types of genres when it came to video games, you know? So I love all those atmospheric kind of details that the creator really just put a lot of time and effort into making sure were prominent. And I would say one of the most, I think they really ramped that up for Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. That's when they really focus on environmental impacts because you have to dress a certain way to survive in some areas, you know what I mean?
So utilizing your meteorological expertise, here's an interesting question for you. What, I guess, kind of climate are we looking at for Hyrule? Where on a hypothetical globe would Hyrule most likely be sitting?
It depends on which Hyrule.
That's true. That's true. Wind Waker Hyrule is very tropical, while
if you're talking about like Oracle of Seasons, that's a very strange kind of meteorological environment there. Because in that kind of situation, I mean, you're dealing with the weather changing absurdly and unexplainably so. I couldn't really explain that professionally, but if I'm talking about, let's say, in the Land of Majora's Mask, or, you know, like the Wind Waker. The Wind Waker is fascinating because as a water-soaked world, I have to wonder why more areas aren't just perpetually covered in rain. You know, it's a tropical area, tropical land. And they did, though, avoid any snow entirely. And I think that kind of dovetails very much into, like, the Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks with having, again, no snow. There's no snow anywhere in those, you know? And
well, there is. There are specific islands and regions.
Was it in Spirit Tracks they had snow?
Yeah, Phantom Hourglass, there is one specific island that has snow. And then in Spirit Tracks, oh, there is the snow... might have been just the snow region in the northwestern square.
Square, okay. We'll call it a square. We'll go with that. And
I want to say it's the snow.
It's that grid pattern.
I want to say it's the snow region or the snow domain, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think one of the more fascinating landscapes has to be the Twilight Princess design setup, and that's because there are some unexplained just chasms. I don't understand what the heck is going on there. It's just there are holes in the land in between regions.
Right, so are we talking about the canyon holes or the fact that the Twilight Realm is opening
and
holes everywhere?
They're just straight dead drops down as if like the entire land has suddenly had like a jigsaw puzzle had some pieces fall away for no reason, you know?
Look, there's a lot of connections between Hyrule and the goddesses. It's obviously very holy.
Yeah, it is holy. That's very true. That's very true. I mean, it looked, I would say it resembled, the Twilight Princess resembled a lot, very much Lorule back in...
Where literally everything was falling apart.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there had huge chunks of land that were just disappeared because of the fact that they decided to destroy the Triforce in the land of Lorule.
Oh, that's... ooh.
But in Twilight Princess, obviously, the Triforce was very much there. But it was weird that the land resembled that.
Interesting thought. Aside from the obvious, we have to make sure that Link isn't going places where he should be going
right now. But they did that. They did that just fine with Ocarina of Time. They didn't have to do that. You know, they didn't do that in the past.
You have two ways to make barriers. You either make walls or you make holes. They decided to go with holes.
With Wind Waker, they just made you turn around.
That's true. You know? But how else are you going to show a endless sea?
And I mean, Twilight Princess is the only one that has these unexplained gaps in landscape that I can think of. They never really talked about, you know.
Interesting.
In Lorule, in Link to the Past, they explained it. You know, like those gaps, those holes. Well, that's because the land was being torn apart. But in Twilight Princess, they never really explained why. As far as I know, I mean, I might be wrong. There might be some hidden lore gem out there, but as far as I know, I don't remember them ever explaining that.
No.
So it kind of made me think like it might have been just programming gaps for, you know, to make sure it could squeeze into the size of the mini disc for the GameCube version. It was purely just to save space.
Hello, everyone. This is Zach with Zelda Universe.
Hi, this is Zara, also with Zelda Universe.
It's redundant for us to say that, because presumably people would be like, oh, yeah, they're on the Zelda Universe podcast.
Yeah, they would, for sure.
But
we're both on columns.
Right, we're both on columns.
And podcasts.
Yes, columns,
and
editors, and writers.
Various, you know, different hats.
You know, and that's, it's that time of season where hats are so important, you know?
Yes.
You gotta have... If you celebrate it, you got to have your Santa hat.
Maybe like a Link hat as well.
A Link hat with like a little ball at the end.
Yeah, some people call it a beanie. I don't know.
A toque.
Is there an official name? A toque, if you're Canadian, like me.
See what I did? I told you I did research beforehand.
You did
a beanie.
You did
yes.
so much research.
I'm really
so
good.
Proud of you.
It's a. It's the librarian in me. But no, like a beanie, a beanie hat of some sort. Yeah, to keep your little ears warm. Those are really the only hats I can think of that are like winter specific. Down in the comments, let us know what hat you would wear during the winter.
Where?
During this season. Perfect.
Yeah.
They don't have comments on podcasts.
Especially if you were in Hyrule for the holidays.
Exactly.
They do on YouTube.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I forgot this is also posted on YouTube.
So YouTubers, leave us a comment.
Exactly.
So, we are here to talk about holiday-themed gifts.
Right. Well, Zelda-themed.
Zelda holiday-themed gifts.
Right,
yeah. Any Zelda-themed holiday gift.
And
did I get it right that time?
Yes, we got it. We nailed it. Yeah, so, I mean, first obviously, if we're all dorks here, and we love that title, I'm sure we've all gotten some great...
Yeah, we wear it very proudly.
Exactly. I mean... You know, I proudly say I write for Zelda Universe.
Is there any other way to be?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, same.
So, around the holidays, you get your gifts. It's really a good way to show somebody you care, get you something that you've really wanted. And a lot of times that's for us gaming related, presumably, right? Specifically Zelda. So... what has been your favorite? Let's start off with you. What's your favorite Zelda themed gift that you've received for the holidays?
Well, you know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about for this segment, I reflected on all of the Zelda merchandise that I have, and it occurs to me that most of the Zelda memorabilia I own has been gifted to me by someone else, with the exception of like a few controllers, my digital copy of Tears of the Kingdom, and like a few knickety-knacks. Mm. I don't know. I guess I'm just a spoiled child.
That's great.
Or I just don't really own that much Zelda stuff. But yeah, because like games, consoles, all of that I've gotten for Christmas, pretty much. I have a few favorites. I don't have like one single favorite, but I have a few things. I have this ugly Zelda Christmas sweater
that's great.
I got from a friend a few years ago. And a lot of my guy friends try to buy me clothes at Christmas. And it just strikes me that like men don't really know how to shop for women's sizes.
No,
I feel like
we don't.
You would, given that you have like three women in your
household. I do, but the best
two
way
little women,
the best way I know how to shop for.
But you gotta learn it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, and also like ask. You know, like right?
Yes.
Just be like,
ask all the questions.
I guess
here's
advice to my fellow clothing buyers for a female. So, you know, whomstever you may be, just ask. There's no harm in being like, hey, I'm thinking about getting something for you for Christmas or your holiday of choice.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, yeah.
Just what size sweater would you like if it's a big cozy sweater, you know? With my wife, we buy one size up because she likes to be cozy in the sweater, you know, but I ask her. Ask questions.
And everybody has a different preference. Exactly.
I
think that and like men try so hard. But anyway, so this sweater is like because it's like a unisex small, it fits me like two sizes too big. But again, cozy, right?
Right.
And so whenever I wear it, like my mom always sort of hints that she doesn't think I should leave the house wearing it. And then again, my mom's like one of those people who will like tell you to your face if your outfit is ugly.
That's the point of the sweater,
she does
mom.
To me. I mean, and I tried to explain it. I was like, it's an ugly sweater. Like everyone's doing it, mom. Like don't judge me. But she's right. It's kind of hideous.
Who's on it?
And I don't really wear it then. And it's just like a green and brown, like basically Lynx tunic colors. And it's got like a Hylian crest.
Oh, nice.
Triforce. I don't know what to call that. The Triforce with the wings
around
it.
That's
is that
the
like
Hylian
the
crest,
family crest?
I mean, that's what I call it.
Right. So that's on the middle. I don't know what to call it. And it's got like little snowflakes on it. It's actually what you would imagine. Pretty standard,
I think that's
right?
That's cute.
You see the same version everywhere. It's pretty
it's
cute.
Like,
I have a picture.
It's like that shirt that all the men wear with the khaki shorts, right? With that thing?
Yeah,
or is it the Skyward Sword
one? Yeah, so men and
where
women
it's more
can
like
wear
the,
it, for sure.
Well, I'm just saying like the...
No.
You know, that stereotypical guy outfit?
It's not meant to be... Well, it's not meant to be like the laser printed ones that you see that are meant to be a redesign of like Link's outfit.
Right.
Like Link's... various tunics from different games. It's supposed to be like its own. It's just like a Christmas sweater. I don't know, Zach. Like, You just gotta know.
I'm just putting you on the spot here. I'm asking a follow-up question to, you know, your shirt.
It's an ugly Christmas sweater.
That's great.
It's really what you would think.
I saw one with Hestu on it.
But it makes me laugh, just because when I think about my friend not knowing what size to buy me. But yes. Yeah, you can get all kinds of different versions. I saw a Yu-Gi-Oh! One, too.
Nice.
I tagged my friend in that because he's a Yu-Gi-Oh! Super fan. I was like, you have to have this.
Well, he's the king of games.
You can get pretty much any nerdy. Yes. I love Yu-Gi-Oh! As well. Yeah, so that's one of mine.
That's great.
I don't know.
I see, I don't have a whole lot of, like, Zelda-themed clothing. I got rid of a lot of that when my wife and I started dating, when I'm like, I have to not wear screen-printed shirts. And now it's gone full circle. So my absolute favorite Zelda gift that I've got, I got last year, actually. So we celebrate Christmas. And I come from I married into a very large family. My wife is the middle of seven kids. It's great. I mean, and that's kind of normal for like, the Midwest, mm-hmm. like we have a bunch of, but I mean, like,
I have a huge family too.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, you know the struggles, you know. And she's the direct.
I have like center. A million cousins. I mean, yeah. Okay, interesting.
So we
like so many people
with how many people we have, we do a drawing for every year for like who gets who buys presents for who. So we're only buying like one gift, you know.
One gift. And.
My
it's like a, yeah,
my brother-in-law like wrote a program so that it like randomly assigns, like he coded something randomly assign us
like an AI.
Yeah, anyway. That's cute. Neither here nor there. So last year,
yeah,
my brother-in-law got me a wall hanging, the Z. From Breath of the Wild with the sword in the center, like in that logo, yeah. Right?
I think I've seen this. You might have sent me.
I sent it. Yeah, I put it in our Slack chat. And
I think I can visualize it.
Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's this nice wood. You know, it's hanging up in my office mm-hmm. at work. You know, because I get more compliments on it there. You know, more people see it.
Right.
So I'm like, right, hey, you check sense. This out here. And, you know, working with kids and everything, mm-hmm. it's like, hey, look, how do you do, fellow kids? I have a Zelda on my wall. Zelda's the girl. Did you know that? I knew that. but yeah, it was a very thoughtful gift because, like,
so
he was also it married handmade? Into the family. Was it? He didn't make it. No, he ordered it. But, it, I mean, it but was it a was handmade thing. Somebody. Right, yeah. Like nice. he had married in as well to the family, and
right.
so like
we're okay.
both in-laws, and we like the first thing yeah. we bonded over was Zelda, you know, and it's just it was one of those mm. things where like because we have nothing in common. I mean, he's a gym rat, you know, he's an insurance guy.
Oh, but I'm sure you have something. Everybody, yeah,
yeah, and something. it was just something
not
that
on
we,
the surface,
really,
but
like,
yeah, for sure.
Right, and then Tears of the Kingdom came out, and you know we were talking about that, and it was great. You know, it was a really awesome. Nice present. You know, very very.
He
thoughtful,
did his research you know. Clearly.
He did.
Yeah,
he did his research, mm-hmm. but
and that's what matters, right? Especially on Secret right. Santa.
Look, when it comes to buying presents, you do your research, and you know you ask your questions.
That's the takeaway.
That's the takeaway. You ask your questions.
Well, but, yes. Well, speaking of Secret Santas, mm-hmm. we do a Secret Santa columns every year at Zelda Universe, and it's like
correct.
Probably the event that I look forward to most during the year. I live for Secret Santa.
That's awesome.
But when I first joined Zelda Universe, I participated in Secret Santa while just being like super new. Mm-hmm. I was probably here for about like a month, and I didn't really know anybody, but I was like, yes, I'm in for Secret Santa. Like, totally, even though I know zero people here. And so I got this really cute Tetra figurine from our friend
nice.
Claire O'Mara from Columns. She was my first to get to. Yeah, and that was like the most thoughtful gift ever because so a few of us who are new at that time had been asked like, you know, just as like a getting to know you thing, like what's your favorite Zelda? What's your favorite piece of Zelda music, what's your favorite boss battle, and like a few other things like that. And we had all volunteered, you know, some of that information. And Claire had remembered that I said that Tetra was my favorite character. And she bought this little figurine and sent it with like a little note. And it was, I still have it. It's on my dresser. Thank you, Claire. It's the sweetest thing ever.
That's one of my favorite parts about the column Secret Santa 2 is that like people just write each other notes as well, like to send things. I feel bad for people overseas, you know, just because like shipping is bananas. And a lot of times you lose that little personal part. But I actually had Caitlin the other year or a couple years ago. She, Caitlin
Last
drew
year?
It.
Yeah.
She had me, I should say. And she sent this little stuffed platypus because she's from Australia. And I loved it. It was amazing.
She's from Australia.
And I was so excited to play with it.
Oh, yeah.
Or not play with it, but, you know, like, have it, you know, put it on something. And then my dang kids took it. And now I don't know where it is.
They took it.
She just...
They hid it somewhere.
Scout,
it'll just probably show
took
up.
It. You know, I don't know. It's lost time at this point. But I loved it. Because there was also a nice handwritten thing, and it was talking about how... something about, you know, about the platypus and just some random trivia
Harry
about
the platypus
as well.
Yeah.
And I like, I'm a big trivia guy.
Did
too,
you?
So, you know, that's, it was nice.
Interesting. But, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm a big trivia guy. Do you have any other, like, standout gifts that you've had? Even just gaming related. Like, did you ever get a console for,
like,
for Christmas or for holiday?
Well, I got... Yeah, I got a GameCube for Christmas one year, and that was probably the greatest thing.
Nice.
With the Zelda Collector's Edition.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar. You must be familiar. You're a GameCube
the silver,
guy, right?
Like the silver
you've
one.
Said this.
Yes. When it has the four games?
Yeah, and it's got four greatest games on it. And the 20-minute Wind Waker
demo. And,
which is
I watched
which
the retrospective.
Which kind of saved my life because...
Oh my god! The retrospective
it's so
on that,
good.
I watched
that's the greatest thing
multiple
ever.
Times. Just every day.
Oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. But when I was relying on like Blockbuster to rent Wind Waker because I didn't have it at that point. I had to rent it like every other week, and when I couldn't, like the 20-minute demo was like the greatest thing
ever.
Right,
exactly. Got to get that fix. That's.
But the story behind this is better because the GameCube that. Was a makeup gift for my dad's growing up previous Christmas gift that he gave me with he gave me a copy of Ocarina of Time for the N64 year previously. And I already told you about this. But so I owned a Super Nintendo at that time. It was actually my brother's. It was sort of handed down to me. And my dad bought me, because I was always bugging him for Zelda. I was like, I want Zelda games. That's all I want to do. That's all I was really into. This is like 8-year-old me. And so he bought me this copy of Ocarina of Time. And you know how, like, when you're a kid, everything seems possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I opened it thinking, like, yeah, I have this. This is a cartridge. The Super Nintendo takes cartridges. If I open it up,
it should
put it
work.
In, it'll totally work. Right?
Yeah. It's
yeah.
The same
and then
thing.
My brother, like, just kind of crushed my dreams. And he very snidely was like, well, what's she going to play that on? She doesn't own an N64.
Was that
so,
big brother?
The game had to be
older
returned.
Brother? Or?
Oh, yes. Oh, of course.
Classic older brother move. Right.
Classic
there.
Older brother
classic.
Snide. I was like, no. It was so classic. So, and I ended up getting Ocarina of Time. I had to wait a while.
Yeah, no. That's.
But I really was obsessed
with
that game.
You got it for it. That's actually really funny. So the only time that you've owned Ocarina of
fate,
Time
right, man?
Was for a console you didn't own. And then the next year, you get the console, a different console.
With the game.
And you can play Ocarina of Time
It was
on.
Better.
I would agree.
Yep.
That's how that was my first experience with Ocarina
and Majora's
of Time
Mask.
As well. Yes. Actually,
yeah,
not my
Majora's
first
Mask.
Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
I played Majora's Mask
my favorite,
for the first
actually.
Time at a hotel. You could rent an N64 at the hotel, and I played it. It was really weird. But no, that's awesome. That is such a sweet story. You know, and it's...
Yeah.
Well, I got to ask. So, like, you opened Ocarina of Time, right? Were you then kind of like, oh, okay. There's an N64 under there, too.
Yes. I don't even think I thought that at the time.
Oh, okay.
Because again, my childhood mind was thinking, no, this is going to be fine.
Oh, yeah.
And then, no, and I think I didn't really think that my dad was going to give me an N64.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Maybe I did.
I mean, because that's
we ended up bringing it back, and I, yeah.
Like, as a parent.
Oh, but, you know, when we brought it back, I got to choose, like, a different, like, whatever game to replace it. But at the time, they weren't selling, like, retail, like, Super Nintendo games. I think that Game Boy Color was really what was in. So I got to pick a Game Boy Color game. And I had a choice between Oracle of Seasons or Ages and Super Mario Bros. Deluxe. And I ended up going with Super Mario Brothers, which I don't regret at all because I love the heck out of that game.
I get
but
it.
I always wonder, like, what could have been? What could have been? Right?
I was a Seasons guy. That was, you know.
Seasons. That was my... I'm playing it now on Nintendo Switch. And, yeah.
You know, those games, you got to experience handheld. Absolutely. They're hard. They're way harder.
I mean, yeah. I'm just not good at really? Video games. Don't say that.
Like, okay. All right.
Yeah, but you were... No. But you're a 2D Zelda person. So for you to say it's hard, that doesn't... That's not good for me because I'm not a 2D Zelda person. But I want to be.
I am notoriously bad at video games.
It's just the
way
it is.
I am just not good at them.
So, you can't be that bad. I don't believe that at all.
Oh, I'm really bad at it.
No, I don't believe that at all.
It's...
No. Well, we'll have to have a... competition to see who's worse because I seriously doubt you could be worse than me.
Well, that's such a sweet story. I'm glad that, you know, it ends up having this like really nice cap on it, you know. I had gotten
Nintendo Did I interrupt
DS.
You? Did you have something to add?
No. I was just saying my console I got was console, quote unquote. I got a DS, like an old DS, like the brick one. When they went like the first
the DS that
wave.
Wasn't light, the DS right. heavy,
yes, the yeah. DS heavy with right. the screen that's like the size of
that's what it should
screen.
Have been.
Well, I mean,
yeah, super chunky.
It was light blue, it was a light blue one. I got Nintendogs with it. And then I put a
oh my god, I was just gonna ask that
Zelda bumper sticker on the top of it. That was. That was a great Christmas gift. I screamed because I was so excited. It was a great time. Yeah, it was last year.
I think I had a similar reaction to the GameCube.
Well, I mean, like, come on, like that's a big gift.
But okay, let me ask you: Do you still have it?
Okay, so it's really funny.
I still have my GameCube. I still have that copy.
Right. I didn't play.
But I'm a bit of a hoarder, but.
Well, I mean, it's important stuff. You know, you got to keep it. For a while, I had stopped
everything.
Playing video games. I know. Oh, what? You can do that? You can stop playing video games? The shirts
through,
I wore in third grade would say otherwise.
Faces.
Sorry, grade three, not third grade. I know you're Canadian. I'll translate for you. But my mom played this game on my DS called Zookeeper, and it was kind of like one of those, it was like a match three game before they got like really big. And I mean, it was a fun game. I liked playing it too, but she played it okay. every night. Like she played it more than I did. So it went to her.
Your mother?
My mother. Yes.
I wish I had parents who could play games with me.
Well, this was a single player game.
My parents, yeah, no, they don't do games. My parents were too old. They're from the pre-tech generation.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it is what it is. But we still, you know, we stand a non-tech family sometimes, you know. These kids with their iPads. No, I'm kidding, obviously. But, no, it's, and I mean, of course,
it's
there's.
It's a good idea.
What? Just to stop or what?
Keeping your kids away from like phones and stuff for as long as you can.
Oh my god. Well,
I think it's positive.
You know, I say that, but my daughter, my 6-year-old, she's really into Minecraft. So we've got a lot of she can play it by herself. Like she's so good at it. I'm talking like, oh hey, you know, kids these days, except for mine, You know, she plays a lot of Minecraft. I've been trying to get her to play Zelda, like, because they have the older ones, you know, on the Switch. So it's, you know, easier to move around, I feel like, on the Game Boy style. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, let's play it. And she's, Dad, this is boring. And I'm like, okay, all right, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool, kid. You think this is boring, huh?
Minecraft is
ask
for
me about your ask me about your generation. Dance recital,
like it's definitely. Kid, but
you want to talk about boring? No,
I don't know if it's the customization and the world building aspect of it is definitely something that kids really like.
100% with my daughter, it's she can spawn in all the animals she wants to. like the game
right.
chugs along for her, like chugs so hard because she has spawned too many animals in her world. And I'm like, you realize that
that's cute.
This is why the game is so slow. And she's like, I like it slow, Dad. I'm like, okay, all right. We've gotten a little bit off topic, but you know,
yeah,
it
that's
just,
okay.
It just goes
better
to
you
show
than me because there, I do it all the time.
There's
I'm bad for it.
You know, we all have those gifts that are you know, really, really close to your heart. You know, especially around the holidays, it's a great way to, you know, do something meaningful for someone you love or care about. And, you know, I encourage all of you listeners out there to just buy a gift for somebody, buy a gift for your friend or, you know, better yet, make a gift for your
friend.
And
write a little heartfelt note.
That's even more
important.
Which is what I do. Like, write something nice.
Yeah.
Just do it, you know?
Yeah.
And just
I've started to rethink Christmas
exactly
more so this year because I'm cutting back a little bit and I'm just this year for a lot of my friends we're just going to do activities or a games night or a trivia night or something that doesn't break the bank but can still like you can enjoy your time together and just
exactly you know, yeah
it doesn't have to be about buying stuff
exactly
yeah.
You know the Grinch had it right in some ways the Grinch had it right in some ways you know. Take away all the sparkly things, all the, you know, the toys and all that. Just let it be a bare bones because it doesn't matter. It's going to come and people are going to be happy.
As long as we have each other.
As long as we have each
That's
other.
That's right.
We can defeat Ganondorf with the power of friendship.
All you know? The monsters. Yes.
So
what I feel
we would
like
love
you
to
just,
hear.
Proposed a My Little Pony Zelda crossover right there.
It's 100%.
Can't wait to see it.
And I'm sure if you were to Google it, you'd find it, you know? so, my apologies to the editors for this episode. But we had fun. I'll take the blame. That's fine. So, down in the comments, let us know what is your favorite Zelda themed or gaming themed gift that you've received. It doesn't have to be holiday related, but you know, what's the nicest gift, Zelda gift that you've got? We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Can't wait to hear it.
Zara, do you have anything else?
Those comments. No.
Okay, great.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Everybody.
In 1998. Christmas. It's the only time I distinctly remember getting a.
Just saying the year you gave it away.
I'm just saying this is the only time I remember getting a Zelda themed gift was in 1998 Christmas when we got Ocarina of Time. Now since this is the end of 98, it wasn't the cool special gold cartridge, but it was Ocarina of Time, and I was so excited. Except there was. I had an older brother, and he was still playing video games at the time. So he got to play it first. There is family recorded video evidence of this, as my I think it was my dad who goes over to the family room. There's Logan playing Ocarina of Time. He's in the Deku Tree. And then there's me over by the computer, because Logan took Ocarina of Time from me. I took my younger sister's Sailor Moon computer game, and I played that before she did. So we're just running it down the line. Sharing, in quotation. This was a really, like, It was not the best Sailor Moon game. I just I have played better Sailor Moon games in the years since.
This was made actually by a friend of mine.
It's funny because Zelda games, for the most part, in my knowledge, rarely came out for the Christmas rush. So most of the time, I remember getting Zelda games not during the holiday season.
You know what? You're right. Yeah, well, yeah. Honestly, the thing is that they were so good, they didn't have to. A lot of gaming companies do time their releases out right toward that part of the year. I know Blizzard has done that, like with a lot of their games, like with World of Warcraft and StarCraft and that kind of stuff. And I know we're focused on Zelda, so I'm not going to talk any more about that. But when it comes to, I mean, you stole my answer. When it came to like a favorite Zelda game or Zelda gift, I have to say it was Ocarina of Time, because it's the one time I got a Zelda game from my grandmother, who has already passed since then. But it was, I mean, Ocarina of Time, it broke barriers. I mean, it was a phenomenal display at the time of graphical ingenuity, of unique textures and mechanics and that kind of stuff in the game. And opening that up, playing it, somebody should have arrested me because I was addicted. So it was not a healthy level of gaming that I was doing once I opened that cartridge.
Well, don't worry. You don't get arrested for addiction. You only get arrested when your addiction causes trouble for other people. Speaking of which, I believe the official term that they were looking for was nerds.
That's what I was saying. I was like, no, you're not dorks. Dorks just mean you struggle with.
I mean, I'm a dork.
To impress others.
I fully admit my dork, dorkness, yeah. But my dorkiness is only tangentially related to my nerddom.
Right. Well, I mean, I being a dork is not something you're proud of. Being a nerd is something you can be proud of.
I'm a dork. I don't care. I think I'm a dork. I don't know. It was really funny.
I don't care, but you don't go around bragging about it. You're just like, hey, everybody, hey. McCleskey, come over here. I want to let everybody know here in the workplace, I am a dork. And then have everybody just start going, all right, man, nice job.
To be fair, you don't announce to the whole work office any of these things anyway. I am a nerd.
They usually already know.
It's blatantly obvious when you're getting awesome gifts that you can put on your wall and be like, yeah, I got
what
a
I
Z.
Thought was awesome. When he talked about having a giant Z with a sword through it, now that is cool. And I don't care. At my TV station, I would hang that up in the weather center and I would field all of the weird questions asking me why in the world I had that in there. I would happily answer that, and I would say, well, I was bestowed this gift. And it represents
bestowed
this princess.
What a great word to use. Bestowed.
It was bestowed upon me. This majestic timepiece. I would proudly display that.
While this is not something that has been gifted to me, I do have a polo shirt with the Hylian crest on it. And I love wearing it because I get to wait and see if anybody I'm interacting with recognizes it. So I can be like, yeah, look at this nerd over here.
I don't think I have any Zelda-themed clothes. I think I mentioned to you in the past that I was thinking about using as a background shot just all of the Zelda games that I own and just posting those on the wall, and then having that be my background. Because everybody else has figurines and collector's items and that kind of stuff. But all I have are all the games. And with everything going digital nowadays, it's just not the same. But I still have the old-fashioned, Nintendo 64 cartridges. I have the GameCube disc. I have all that old stuff. Do you collect and keep those, you know, the cartridges they came in?
I used to. I still have my NES, Legend of Zelda, and Adventure of Link. I don't have the N64 or Majora's Mask one. I'm not sure where those went off to. I do have my Wind Waker. I'm pretty sure I have most of them.
One of the things that I've always done is with every one of these games, I always, the first time I ever play the game, I always have that save file in it that I never touch.
Oh, that's cute. I like that.
Yeah. I never touch that save file because that helps to also date when I got the game, when I first started it. And then if I wanted to go back in there and see just how badly I was playing it for the first time, I can find out everything I missed.
No, that's important.
It's a good way to keep myself humble, even though these are busted.
No, that's important. I mean, I have posters of Zelda and all these things. When we're talking like the biggest Zelda gift I ever got, this was actually an anniversary present. I have a replica Master Sword and Hylian Shield, and they look amazing. And it's wonderful to get them. But the joy of this franchise, this series, is the fact that they are games. That they're experiences that you get to have and not just possessions that you hold. I mean, I can have, you know, all the cute amiibos and everything that I can possibly get as gifts and whatnot. But at the core, these are story, adventure, experiences. And so being able to look back at, yes, this is when I played Link to the Past and it has this kind of effect on me. Talking about Seasons and Ages, I'm so glad that they did because they are criminally passed over so much.
Well, you couldn't get them. It was hard to play them because they were out. Like, for me personally, I mean, those games came out when I don't know. I think it might have been just a time in my life when maybe they weren't very well advertised or what, but I just didn't hear much about them. They were on a handheld device. I think, didn't those come out during Wind Waker?
They came out
the Oracles
close-ish to the same time. They were near the very end of the Game Boy Color's time frame. And so
It's like, I mean, Wind Waker, GameCube was starting to just, I mean, it was just overshadowing them entirely. And, I mean, honestly, with some of the newer games, the graphics, they just spoil you, you know? And you try to go from that back to Game Boy Color, and you have to really, truly only appreciate the lore, I think, sometimes. What I love is the fact that you can play all those games now straight off of the Switch.
It's wonderful.
It is absolutely amazing. There's a huge gold mine of games on there. I mean, you have to have that subscription, but I mean, honestly, that's a small price to pay to have that kind of library of games. It's amazing. Absolutely.
Anybody who is listening to this and has not taken the opportunity to experience the older Zelda games, even if you don't play them to the end, because they are older, shorter, in some ways a lot more challenging.
Doesn't matter.
Take some time.
Oh, they're very challenging.
Take some time and appreciate what has come before, because they are still wonderful experiences.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the ZU Podcast. My name is A1 Judge J, and this is my friend Kokiri Claire.
Hello, everyone.
All right, today we're going to be talking about specific winter topics in Hyrule, specifically about some of our favorite snowy and wintry locations in the games. So this is a bit of an interesting topic because for me, when I think of Hyrule, my first like instinct doesn't really go to snow and like winter location. It goes to like the grasslands and like, you know, like forest areas mostly. But I think just about every Zelda game, at least all the 3D ones, have some kind of like wintry or snow area. Even Wind Waker, which is all like snow and ice, Wind Waker, which is all ocean, I should say, has that one island which is completely made of ice, which is interesting. Do you have any like off the bat that you know about that are like that come to mind? Not necessarily your favorite, but just some that like you can think of that kind of fit that category.
Well, the one that comes to mind instantly is Majora's Mask, the Snowhead area. I don't know why, but that area in particular always kind of stood out to me, like, when I think of snow or winter in Zelda games.
It's definitely very haunting. Just like the music, combined with the winds for that place just makes it, like, I don't know what it is. It makes it very, you know, the whole point is that, you know, Goron Hero died there, and the whole place is just, like, completely covered in just, like, desolate winter. But something about it just feel like totally lifeless. Definitely not one of my favorite places, honestly.
Yeah, it is kind of creepy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the whole MO Majora's Mask. So I guess they got that down, pretty down pat, honestly.
Pretty much.
For me personally, my personal favorite like snow area in like all the games, I love Snowpeak in Twilight Princess. Everything about that area is just like peak winter. Let's see what it did there. it's peak winter to me. I love the music for that place. I love the atmosphere and the environment, the sounds you hear. Like, unlike Snowhead, where it's like very like desolate and like it's desolate. It's like deathly. Like, it's like if you stay here, you're going to get hurt. You're going to meet an unfortunate end. Here it's like the, I don't know, it's like the essence of like a beautiful winter to me. I don't know how to really explain it. It's like you go through, you hear the music, and like you're going through the snow, and like it's just these beautiful like piano pieces and like the a cappella that you hear as you go through. It just gives it this like mystical feeling of just going through like a winter wonderland. Like it's more dangerous than any of the other areas because you're at risk of getting lost there, and you know it is cold, but at the same time it's like I don't know, there's not as much of a risk to being there as there are the other like snowy areas that you come across in other games, especially in places like Breath of the Wild, where literally if you don't have the right clothes you're going to die.
Yeah, that's very true.
That whole thing for me, plus the fact that it's attached to one of my favorite dungeons in the game, which is the whole like ice mansion house thing. Like it just has like everything about it like perfectly. Honestly, just that whole area is just really nice.
I like that area too, especially the little, what was it, the snowboarding thing?
Yes, with the Yeti. When you snow on the ice. I love doing that. I love being able to like trick your way through the shortcuts. I don't like racing his wife though, because she but I love the first way down, because you listen to the ambiance as you're going down the route, so it gets you used to like seeing the sights as you're going down. You're just like, this place is gargantuan. Like, it is huge. And like you get a better view of the sky as you climb up. And, like, you know, whether it's, like, night or day, but especially twilight, because, I mean, I guess they made it so that, like, every place looks better if you go there during twilight, which is the point. But, like, it just looks so gorgeous under those kinds of, like, under those filters. Like, it just looks really, really beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. I had to Google pictures because I kind of forgot how the area looked like. And I just kind of forgot how gorgeous the scenery is. I really need to replay that game.
It's a classic, honestly. Like, for the longest time, I mean, before Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom came out, that was my number two, honestly. And then, you know, those games came out, and then it was like, okay, well, now we're number two, because I can't knock off Ocarina. Speaking of which, I do love the Ice Cavern. Like, I do like the feel of that place, where it's like this, like, you know, you can see it all the way back to when you were a kid. But, like, it's this, you know, it's this little secret area you can see all the way back when you're younger. And you always wonder, like, how do I get up there? And, you know, when you finally get the chance to actually go up there, you know, even if it means, you know, a place that you're familiar with being a warm and tranquil environment getting frozen over, which is sad. But seeing that you can go up to the Ice Cavern is, you know, it makes it a lot more special.
Yeah, the Ice Cavern is definitely one of the cooler areas in Ocarina of Time, I think. I just made a pun. I didn't realize that.
I know. I figured. Yeah, what's your favorite?
Like, in general?
Yeah, do you have a favorite ice area in Zelda? Or, like, a snowy area?
I still think I kind of want to say Snow Peak, even though it's not the most safe for...
Snowhead,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting him mixed up.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, I like Snowhead for some reason. I don't know why.
I will say it's very, like, it's cool looking. Like, I do love the Snowhead Temple. Like, it's got the fortress aspect down. Like, it looks intimidating. Which, you know, it accomplishes its goal. Like, you see that in the distance and you're like, oh, what is that? Like, I don't want to go. Like, you both don't and do want to go near it.
I know, I felt so stupid. As a kid, when I first played that game, I kept trying to roll, like, towards the invisible Goron, like, trying to get into the temple, and I kept falling off the
edge.
Yeah,
me too.
I was like, why is this not working?
I wrote an article about this, but my copy of Majora was used, so I had, like, a fully completed file, so I was, like, exploring around there. So when I got to that point, because when you reset, like, all the past events, like, reset too... So I had no idea that you had to put the things to put the Goron to sleep, or that there was even a Goron there. I thought it was the temple blowing me back.
So, yeah, same.
So like I kept like rolling in vain, trying to be like, how do I get through there? And then I was like, oh, what if I just like press shield as the Goron? Then like maybe then I could just like duck under the wind, and that didn't work. And eventually, I don't know how, I just kind of like, what if I just play every song here? Maybe that'll work. And then one of them eventually did. And I'm like, oh, it was a Goron. Okay.
I know, and then he just kind of falls off the edge.
it would have been morbid if he didn't survive that fall. It's just I would say that I like the ice areas in like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, but like they're huge. They're huge, and there's like too many of them. Like you have Nehru's area, and then the Hebra area, and then you have the Gerudo Highlands. There's like three different snow areas in those games, and they take up like 60% of the map, and it's infuriating how much snow there is that you have to cross if you want to like explore a lot of places, and how many mountains you want to cross, especially in Tears when like there's icy walls and everything. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, like, it was really cool when you get to like Hodno Village and you get to the quest where it's like, do you see that tree up there? And it takes you to the you know, it sort of, like, guides you to the quest with Nedra, which is, you know, that was a really good one. Like, that was a really good thing. Like, it made that area a lot more memorable for me. Like, especially involving the Spring of Wisdom. But, like, it just gets overshadowed by just how much snow there is.
I know. I'm still really overwhelmed by the size of that game. I still haven't finished Tears of the Kingdom, but there's just a lot to do. A lot to explore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it is meant to be like a game you just go back to over and over again.
Yeah, I should probably get back to that. It's been a couple months for me.
Yeah. Do you have a least favorite winter area? The one that you don't like?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if I do. Did Skyward Sword have one? I'm not sure if it did.
You know what? I actually don't think Skyward Sword had a winter area. I just realized it did not. It didn't have one.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Like even Spirit Tracks did. That's really strange.
That is strange.
Do you have like any memories associated with like those kinds of like locations that you've been to before? Like in the Zelda games? Like anything that sticks out personally to you?
I always liked coming across that one island in the Wind Waker. What was it? The Ice Ring Isle?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think you had to shoot it with a fire arrow.
That's right. Yeah, you have to shoot like the ice dragon head thing. That was really, pardon my pun, cool.
Yeah, it was really cool, like sailing at night and coming across that. Like, it just kind of sticks out among everything.
Yeah. Like in the same vein, like seeing the volcano island, because like you have to cross that when you're doing the main adventure.
Yeah.
Like you cross it, but you can't do anything with it. But at night, it's like a giant like lava lamp. You're like, what is this? So it's like the same thing when you see it later, like the ice rink one, you're just like, whoa, that's so cool looking. What is that?
Yeah, because one, you had to use the fire arrow to cool it down, right? And then the other one, you had the ice arrow. I keep saying these puns and I don't realize it.
I'm saying you have to cool down the ice range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting tripped up.
No, I understand. For me, my favorite thing with, like, I don't know. Like, personally, memory-wise, when it comes to Snowpeak, like, I just remember, like, playing it with my friend, honestly. He owned Twilight Princess. At the time, I didn't, so I just watched him play it, because I enjoyed, like, going through games, like, through the experiences of others. And, like, watching him go through, like, the, like the Winter Mansion, it was really, really cool seeing, like, all those, like, how all the rooms connected and how, like, the dungeon is someone's house that a bunch of beast people live in. Like, it's such a really neat concept. But it's, like, it's somehow, like, you could, like, it's believable. Like, it's not too ridiculous. You could be like, this is dumb. Like, you look at this, you're like, this is actually, like, kind of feasible.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool dungeon. It was different, but it was definitely fun. And it was also creepy because you had Blizzetta. She was
I was just thinking about that. Like, like her as the boss at the very end, where she twists her entire head around.
I mean, I was like, what the hell, when I first saw that.
I can't forget that. That was awesome. I mean, she might have been easy, but the music and, like, the fear factor associated with it is top class, without a doubt in my mind.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and, like, it definitely, you know, like, I think, like, both, like, the whole thing of, like, curing a winter area, making it warmer, is in of itself a beautiful thing alongside the winter area, too. And, like, I think we're past this point where, like, I think they said it was okay to talk about spoilers, but if not, like, you guys can cut this part out. But another favorite, like, recently was the I forget the name of the boat, but it's the boat in Tears of the Kingdom that you sent upward with Tulin. I would say that counts as a winter or a cold area because it's freezing up there, and I think it's snowing the entire time. Like, what an introduction. You're going up all these, like, magic boats to this, like, massive giant... Oh, it's the Stormwind Arc. That's what it is. To this giant boat in the sky that's, like, that you can only see the silhouette of from a distance when it's, like, flashed with by lightning. Like, that's... It's so cool. Like,
that was pretty cool.
I don't know if that counts as a winter area necessarily, but, like, I think it counts enough. And, like, even though I definitely didn't, you know, it was really sad to see Rito Village getting covered in snow. There was kind of a beauty to it being snow-covered. Like, you know, in the same vein as, like, seeing the Goron Village of Majora's Mask snow-covered had its own kind of beauty to it. Like, Rito Village also covered in snow kind of felt the same way. Even though, like, you know, I don't like being cold. But seeing it being kind of, like, holiday-ish in my eyes, I don't know. It was something about it was just kind of nice. But, I don't know, that's just me. I mean, realistically, they were suffering from food shortage and literally possibly freezing to death, so I can't really say that I admire it too much, but I don't know, that's just a me thing.
I mean, at least, like, they had feathers compared to Link, who's kind of just walking around naked at that point.
Yeah, at least they could wear feathers or something. Yeah, that's about everything I can think of. Do you have anything else you can think of?
I don't know, like, what other big, memorable, wintry places there are from the games that I can remember.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are, like, a ton. I mean, there are, like, notable ones, but compared to, like, how many, like, forest areas and desert areas there aren't really, like, a ton that you can really get to when it comes to, like, all the other games.
Yeah, true. I think we covered, like, the major ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give a special shout out to the Temple of Droplets, which is, like, the only ice area in Minish Cap. I do like the idea behind it, where, like, Lake Hylia has this, like, one little segment that's just, like, totally frozen over. I like the music there, and I like the gimmick of using sunlight to melt everything because you're so tiny. I thought that was neat.
That is neat. I like that.
Yeah, that was a cool concept. But yeah, I think that's everything. Okay. Yeah, I guess that's it for our segments. Okay, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. Alright, we will see everybody later. Thank you so much for listening in, and have a good holiday.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
My first time in Twilight Princess, going through Snowpeak, I remember everything being dark and foggy and gray. You're trying to go through this specific area so that you don't wander off and get sent back to the beginning. So you're in wolf mode for most of this whole segment, going up and around in these mountains. But I remember at one point I had inadvertently turned off the senses, so it was just me as a wolf, and the clouds had cleared, and it was absolutely gorgeous. And there are several points in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom where, if you're paying attention, the overcast skies part, and the lighting and the atmosphere and everything coming off of the snow, it is some of the most beautiful pieces of environment design that Zelda has ever produced.
It is really nice. And that's why, like I mentioned earlier, like the environmental design, graphic design in these Zelda games, I think has been so underrated. You know, like they really did a lot. They focused a lot. They put a lot of effort and energy into making sure those looked really good. And I think they did too good of a job with those. And I say that because people just ignore them and assume that, well, yeah, that's what it would be like. And that's why nobody talks about it, because they did their job. They did their job very well, probably too well. And people are like, well, yeah, that's what it would look like. Rather than hearing, you know, rather than otherwise, you would hear things like, that doesn't make any sense. That looks awful.
It's really funny when this is a whole different discussion as we get into everyone complaining about aspect ratios and resolution differences or whatever. And you don't just take a moment and enjoy what has already been given to you.
Exactly.
And it is just amazing what they're able to utilize and design. Even though ice temples are probably the second most annoying temples, second only to water temples, so it's all water creating nothing but annoyances in our adventuring lives.
That is my least favorite place. And that's just because of how long it took to get through the water temple.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly having to change the water level, you know?
Yeah.
That was the thing. Now, granted, I get it. Like, it's part of the design. You have to try to figure things out. It's a puzzle. And that's great the first time. But if you replay through the game, which, I mean, I have replayed Zelda games so many times because I love the Zelda games. The second time, the third time, it's all, those mechanics are very, very old. But when it comes to some of the areas, like anytime they do an ice temple or a snow temple or something like that, you know, like the ice cavern in Ocarina of Time or Snow Peak in Twilight Princess or Snowhead over in Majora's Mask. I think we got that right. I think we were listening and we heard those names. They went over those names and a few times there. So I got them right now. When they were talking about that. I mean, I don't know. There's something about snow. It's probably because I grew up in Florida, and in Florida, people are like, "Ooh, ah!" But then, you know, in the northern states, people refer to snow in a more derogatory fashion. So,
well, speaking as somebody from the more wintry climes, it's like comparing places that get a lot of water versus areas that don't.
Yeah.
In areas that don't, water has this generalized term, moisture. We're so glad for this moisture that we are getting, because that's all they care about. That's all they know. Meanwhile, you come over to the Midwest or the Pacific Northwest or anything like that, and you have a dozen different terminology for the kind of precipitation that you're getting. That's and true. So when you're dealing with your situation is, snow. Ooh, meanwhile, up in Michigan, it's just like, okay, so how much we get? Is this a blizzard? Is this a flurry? Is this just a snowfall? Is it sleet? And we can go through this whole gambit of what exactly are we dealing with and what are we working with. My challenge with snow levels is the same as with water levels, is there is a purposeful slowing down of your character and your progression. Being in water tends to be slower. Changing the water levels is slower. When you're on ice, you have to go slower because either the snow is preventing you, or the ice, if you are not careful, is going to send you places where you don't want to be.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's painful.
Especially if you have hover boots on while you're on ice. Yeah, good luck.
Wind Waker did the best with that. Because if you're running around on Ice Ring Isle with Link and you suddenly like try and stop, Link reacts. And to this day, I still use that reaction myself when something is going on and I have to like stop myself or stop something from falling. I'm just like, that is something
it is really funny.
A lot.
I love it. His expressions have melted the hearts of so many girls that I've attempted to date.
He's a good boy.
Yes, I know.
He's a good boy just doing his best.
And it's just so funny. We have a lot of these aspects of these games where seasons come into play, not just in Oracle of Seasons, where obviously that seasons were very much.
That was the whole point.
Right, that was the whole friggin' point. Because in Ocarina of Time, they advanced time, but it was still kind of like the same time of the year. The season really didn't change. I would say Majora's Mask, Oracle of Seasons.
Well, look at it this way. Ever since Link to the Past, there has been a ice-related environment in every single game except for Link's Awakening, Oracle of Ages, and Skyward Sword.
There wasn't one in the first one, was there? They had mountains in the first one, but it wasn't ice cover.
They had mountains, but they didn't have they didn't have the technology to implement complex weather situations. And so from Link to the Past onward, that's where you started to get environmental challenges.
Yeah. Well, they had Death Mountain. They had Death Mountain in the first one.
So yeah, but Death Mountain was a dungeon. It was Spectacle Rock. And that was it.
Oh, that was all it was.
Oh. Yeah. Well, Matthew, thank you so much for joining with me for this holiday episode of the Zelda Universe podcast.
You bet, man. It's been fun.
Thanks to all of our segment hosts. I'm so grateful to have you all. Jory, Claire, Zara, Zach. Appreciate your thoughts and comments. Everyone who has been listening, we appreciate it. And have yourselves a wonderful rest of your 2023. We will see you next year.